I'd be lying if I said I had pinpoint clarity on the entire path of where I was going.
Right.
But what I knew was I would be able to continue to get better at my craft, and I'd be able to do it with somebody whose reputation stood strong, so that when people did view or acknowledge what I had going on, they would be kind of forced to take it serious. Mm.
So today we talked to a guy named Colin Odell. Now, full transparency, I met Colin about 5 or 6 months ago, and he reached out to me on LinkedIn through cold outreach. And for some reason, and I get tons of these every day, some reason it resonated. I knew he was in Birmingham. He said he was in Birmingham. I said, hey, come over and eat lunch. We'll hang. So after an hour of eating lunch and just hanging out, it was cool. And so we just got into a relationship. He's a magnificent video creator. He owns a company called Joy Collective. But what we do is that's just the back end of this whole thing. So what we do is we go back through growing up and how he was on tour with a music artist for over 5 years and got his 10,000 hours behind the camera with touring and making videos and just the behind the scenes stuff. And then he transitions into owning a retail vape shop in Gulfport, Mississippi. And then a hurricane takes him to Birmingham for a couple of days to get out of the way of the hurricane. And God, goodness gracious, he stays. And that journey has been so magnificent. And I'm super thankful for this guy because he's a great friend of mine. And I'm excited to share with you the story of Colin Odell. Colin, thank you so much for joining me today. So let's give you a background a little bit. So Colin reached out on LinkedIn, cold outreach. And to be honest with you, Colin and I have gotten to be really, really good friends, but also do a lot of business stuff together. I've sent people to you. I mean, it's been a really, really great relationship the past, I don't even know how long we've known each other, but that's not long at all, but like it's been really good. And one of the things I really love and respect about you is your business, the things you've done at such a young age, what you're doing now, incredibly talented video guy. We're going to get into all that. But I'm just super thankful. I'm thankful for your friendship, but I'm also thankful that you joined us today. So I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
So let's do this. Let's go back. Who are you? Like, where are you from? Give me the skinny on like that first 8 or 10 years of childhood. Like, where, you know, all those things.
Yeah. 8 or 10 years of childhood. I'm Colin Odell. I'm from Slido, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 32. First 8, 10 years of childhood. To be honest, man, like I feel like I had a pretty like standard, normal kind of upbringing, you know what I'm saying? I'd say like fighting on that middle class line. Dad did sales his whole life. Yeah. You know, mom.
What kind of sales? What do you do?
So he's been in the appliance industry his whole life. So I've watched him work like every rank, all the way from like running a warehouse to like on the sales floor to like wholesaling the stuff for the vendors to the retail side.
Gotcha.
So he kind of just like climbed up throughout my whole life, and I never really like put that in perspective until like later on.
Mm-hmm. Grew up in Slidell. What'd your mom do?
My mom did whatever she could do to make sense of her time in regards to like adding value to the family. So for example, I remember there was a season when she worked at like The Gap, the clothing store, just because to leverage the discounts, like to get all the kids
for clothes. The kids. Yeah.
Then eventually that kind of transitioned into her essentially running her own daycare out of her house. That way she could, you know, still be at home and take care of us and put some food on the table. So she's always played that kind of like buffer role.
So at some point, someone says, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? When you were a kid, what did you say? Hey, when someone said, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? What'd you say?
It's a good question. I think it depends on the age.
Yeah, sure.
There was a time where it was like skateboarding.
Yeah.
Being a professional skateboarder, watching the X Games, stuff like that. You know, that was everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know. And then I think we get into high school and then, you know, egos come and we kind of start shifting and stuff and perspectives start to change a little bit. But skateboarder would be the answer for sure.
So wanted to like to skate that vibe, everything. Go to high school. Good student, bad student in high school. Where'd you live there?
I'd say hybrid in the middle.
Sure.
Meaning like I wasn't a bad student. One of those students like constantly getting in fights or like doing anything kind of off the wall. But I wasn't very active and participating in regards to like my grades and everything. I was just heavily distracted, focused everywhere but school itself. And truthfully was just there for like the social kind of culture aspect of it.
When you say distracted, what do you mean? Like what was taking most of your attention?
I think it was a mixture. I mean, I'm thinking about this in real time. I think it was a mixture of like, A, you have fear of you know, you're in this whole new world now, this high school ecosystem, making sure, you know, just the social side of it, right? Like, right. You know, who do I click with? You know, how will I survive to the end of the day, not make somebody mad, end up in a fight, get bullied, nothing of that nature. So there was like that side of it. But then there was also, that's a good question. I think I was just distracted by life and it was just all coming fast. So you had the social side, you know, I'd go home. I was heavy into like computers and
okay.
you know, games and stuff like that coming up. That started to transition as the social side started to change, meeting friends, start getting cars. Now you start going places, you know, just the evolution of it all. But everything but doing the homework, preparing the projects, executing like, yeah.
You're an incredibly talented, at 32, you're a really talented video guy. Did you do any of that in high school?
In middle school, you know, I had a group of friends and we were into skateboarding. And at the time, you know, the whole thing with skateboarding was like the professionals, like they started by getting like sponsors.
Yeah.
And the way they would do that is they would videotape, like they would basically videotape themselves skating and like put together like a sick edit and pitch that to like local skate shops and stuff to get sponsors.
Sure.
So to answer that question, I mean, yeah, it started in middle school. Me and the buddies would like just film each other and then put our own little like skate videos together with like a section for me, a section for them. You know, I remember getting excited about like picking what my song would be in the background while it was playing. So the seed definitely started there.
Love
sure.
it. Love it. So when you get done with high school, what's the plan? So like when I was growing up, obviously heavily, heavily into sports, all I ever wanted to do was play college football. All I ever wanted to do. So my life revolved around that. Sounds like you were a little distracted just by whatever. Where do your thoughts go when someone said, what you gonna do when you get done with high school? What did you say there?
To be honest, I didn't have that answer.
Yeah.
I ended up dropping out of high school. Essentially, I got a GED. And at that time, I remember a lot of my friends' parents telling me, you know, very blatantly, like, hey, with a GED, like you're basically gonna be working at McDonald's, right? Like
that's just how
it was. That's just the narrative of the time,
yeah.
right?
So, I would say I would agree with that because like the kids that I knew that dropped out of high school either didn't go back and just floated or they eventually went back and got their GED because it's just kind of what you did. Right. So, I mean, I would agree with that.
Right.
So keep going.
And I mean, I was still distracted. I just knew I was going to figure something out. I instantly jumped into the workforce. I think I was just ready to like be on my own per se, as you know, naive and silly it is looking back at that age. But I just instantly jumped into the workforce and just like focused on anything that grabbed my attention at the time on the computer. So that really transitioned into me getting a job at Best Buy in the computer department doing computer sales.
Were you Geek Squad?
Not Geek Squad, but I did computer sales for sure. For sure. And, but I mean that essentially like, I think, I look back and I think that was such a valuable moment.
That's awesome.
In the story of it all, because things I remember vividly, like to this day, is out of all the odd jobs I had, you know, pre that, I guess to give a little context, I would take jobs. I always knew I had to have a job and I needed to make money. I wanted to have money in my pocket. I wanted to be able to take a girl on a date. You know, like I knew that much. Career wise, not a clue. So when everyone's going off to college, I don't know anything about none of that, but I know I need to make money. I know I need to support myself. Mm-hmm. So I would take a bunch of odd jobs. And
when you say odd jobs, you're like,
I'll be clear.
Cutting grass.
I would always go for the labor jobs because I recognize the pattern real quick. They're like, oh, they would pay more at an entry level, right? So warehouse jobs, appliance warehouses, rooms to go warehouse, delivery, you know, stuff like that. And that's where I started, but I was an awful employee in the grand scheme of things because my ability to show up on time wasn't there.
I'm gonna work, but I don't wanna work.
Yeah. So you know, and it was a corporate structure, you know, it was like three strikes, you're out. So I'll never forget, I was working at Rooms to Go. They told me straight up, if you're late one more time, we have to fire you. It's just part of the system. I knew it was gonna happen. So I went, got a job at Best Buy while working at Rooms to Go. Sure enough, I showed up late. Got fired, deuces, I'm over there. Yeah. And that was kind of pivotal change because what I noticed the most over there was the work culture. I thought the work culture was really cool. The management at Best Buy, seriously. It was the first time I never knew what that word was then, but I knew in like walking in that building, like it felt different going to work. It didn't feel so miserable. Like, oh, I got to go to work.
You didn't mind getting up and going.
And that was new for me.
That's good.
Yeah. So I'll let you kind of drive this. I don't really know where I'm going with all this, but Best Buy planted the seed for sure because the work culture was, I highly appreciated it. And then through that process, I learned sales, which I had never had any sales experience.
Right.
And, you know, they just kind of threw me in the water. And I think when it was all said and done, it, you know, I think when it was all said and done, naturally there was a skill there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because they would push me to try to get customers to sign up for like the Best Buy credit card.
Okay.
That was kind of like the whole play.
Yeah.
You know, 18 months interest-free financing. And after doing that enough times, I kind of sold myself of like, man, I need to get this Best Buy credit card. So at the time, you know, dropped out of high school, was working this job. Me and my parents like weren't really seeing eye to eye. Moved out the house. I was living with my girlfriend and her family at the time.
Okay.
And I essentially sold my girlfriend's mother at the time to co-sign for me to get the Best Buy credit card.
Come on.
Sure enough, got approved, like $5,000 credit limit. I'm 18 years old. I mean, that amount of money is absolutely insane.
Right.
And that's when I got my first camera and iMac computer. And literally from there, you know, I mean, that was the beginning of it all. I think like 2 months later, I started messing around with web design, started a web design business and told myself, if I can make the same amount of money I make at Best Buy doing web design, the moment I do that,
I'm done.
I'm out of here.
So how old are you at the time? You get the $5,000 credit card. This is a cool story. You get the $5,000 credit card and you buy a camera, you buy a Mac, and you start doing this web design thing. How old are you right now?
18, maybe 19.
Oh, my stars. This is incredible. So you're not living in the house. You're living with your girlfriend and her parents, which is crazy. And then you start this. So where does it transition from there?
So it transitioned from there. I started a web design business, leveraging the sales that I learned from Best Buy, doing cold outreach to other businesses, trying to sell them on getting a website. At the time, people either didn't have a website or maybe the one they had was very outdated. Technology was moving fast. So it's funny looking back, I had a nice little value prop, had a nice price range for the market. Yeah. And so I was just out hustling, you know, just trying to make any transaction I could out of that, trying to build a brand. And then I think the moment that I started to get traction with that, you know, it wasn't wise. It was like, if I was making $300 a week at Best Buy, I was like, the moment I make this, I quit.
No.
Well, my first $300, I quit. You know, not testing out how many months in volatility, none of that stuff, you know, so I just went with it. And, but once I got that momentum and that feeling of being able to do that,
yeah,
I think from that moment, I was bulletproof. So I just started kind of doubling down on anything really that I could think of and that I was into. And, at the time, I was also pretty heavy into like, just like music and hip hop culture.
Okay.
It's really prevalent, you know, being so close to New Orleans. And music videos growing up, I was always a big fan of that.
Okay.
This was kind of the birth of the video side where I had the website thing going. It was making money. I had my version of product market fit.
Yeah.
And so then I just started with the downtime that I had learning really how to use the video camera and started cold outreaching to like local artists that were just like aspiring and saying like, hey, I'll make a music video for you for free. And they were just like, you know, who's going to turn that down?
Right.
Again, I'm probably 19. And so I did a lot of that. That gave me the tools to be able to learn how to make that product, you know, music videos. And I'd say fast forward 6 months later, there was a local artist at the time who was locally was really starting to pop off, but on a big scale wasn't a major act yet.
Yeah.
And common theme here, I reached out to them, cold outreach via Twitter.
This
at the
cold
time.
Outreach thing is like, that's your MO. Like, this started at 18, and here we are at 32. And cold outreach is building your, and we'll talk about that in a second. Cold outreach is building your video business here. People hate cold calling, but you've made a lot of money and made a lot of relationships and made a lot of traction doing this. I think this is great because I mean, a lot of people just think it's the devil. So there's this, who's the local guy that's doing, starting to pop off that you get contact with?
Yeah. So his name was Kevin Gates.
Okay.
Currently now, if you were to Google him, he's, you know, He's a well-established major national act.
Yeah.
But at the time, I mean, this was probably like 6 months before he really broke off and signed a major label deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, long story short, reached out on Twitter. His wife was running his Twitter at the time. It started with a website. I'm like, hey, I can make y'all a website. They were like, bet. We got together, worked out a deal. I remember I did two websites for him. They paid me $1,000.
$1,000.
Out of my mind. Couldn't believe it. You know,
three pages. So you're going to pay me $1,000 to build you a website. And they're like, where do I sign?
Exactly, exactly. And that started the relationship. Simultaneously, I was doing those free videos on the side. Once I completed their project, did their websites, built that relationship, felt comfortable to be able to communicate with them via text and stuff. Eventually, they started saying like, hey, you know, if you want, we have a show or a concert over here and you're right there. If you want to stop by, like you totally could. So
let me go back. Hold on, go back to this.
Yep.
This is something that people don't do these days as much. You said free videos. Why are we doing anything for free at this point? Because you don't have wealth. You're living with your girlfriend's parents. Why are you doing free videos?
Right. It's a good question. So my brain, the little bit that I knew was, A, I have to learn how to do the thing that I want to do.
So reps.
I'm going to need reps. I'm going to need the practice. And I'm going to need, you know, a muse to do that with. And B, I also knew, I feel like at a young age, I understood the art of perception in the sense of like brands. So with the music video thing, like I knew if enough people let me do videos, I would have enough videos to put on a website. So that if I were to outreach to somebody else,
proof of concept,
they could go, okay, well, enough people are working with him. Like, he must be legit. And
he's done this.
That was
videos.
It. Yeah.
And there was a telling how much they paid him. Little did they know it was $3.99.
Correct.
So, okay. So you start getting in a relationship with Kevin Gates. You build a website, they pay a grand total of $1,000. And then tell me where it went from there.
So, yeah, we completed the project. I completed the project. And that started the relationship. So now I'm comfortable and I'm texting them. I was also trying to pinpoint this. So also locally in my city, there was a radio station host named Wild Wayne, who was very popular at the radio station. He'd been DJing, doing the morning show for a long time. Another relationship that I had built simultaneously within all of this, he would host a music industry conference every month. It was called Industry Influence. And I guess the concept was to just provide value, insight, and knowledge in like a panel form to other aspiring industry players, whether it be the artists, the managers, the video, right, you know, whoever. In the midst of all of this, you know, I was working. So it's not like I was doing one thing and then one thing only. Like if I was hitting up cold outreach on this person, best believe I had hit up another 100 people. And one of those people was Wild Wayne at the radio station. Same thing for free every month. I'm going to film and do an event recap for your events, put my logo on your flyers. This was
how
back
big
when
is
you would
social
pass
media
out flyers.
At the time?
Definitely not what it is today. We're talking, it's a good
like
question.
20,
this is like, 2010, 2011
wow.
vibes.
Yeah.
YouTube was a thing, not in
no
the same
Instagram.
Use case.
The
as
Facebook
it was.
Was big.
Instagram existed, but a lot of people at the time just thought it was like for putting filter. That's what I signed up for because I thought it was to put filters on photos and then I would export them out. I didn't even realize in the beginning it was like a timeline feed. So I would say this was like the birth of Instagram.
Okay.
And Facebook's running the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So you're doing this for the radio show guy. Where is this tracking? Where's it going?
So while I'm doing this with the radio guy, I'm at these events every month. People are starting to kind of familiarize themselves with me. Essentially, when I locked in that project with Kevin Gates, I was able to build that relationship. Well, only a couple months go by that the radio host brought Kevin on as the main event for the, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, I reached out to them. Hey, I'm already going to be there. Just letting you know. Da-da-da-da. They came. That was like our first interaction in person as far as work, like the depth of that relationship in regards to me and Kevin. And from there, that was kind of the beginning of it all. His team kind of extended the invite to like, hey, you could pull up to any of our shows. I knew like if I'm going to a show, I'm going to do something productive. So
sure.
I would bring my camera. And that just transitioned into like me being the camera guy for Kevin Gates that filmed anything, everything. Studio sessions, concerts. I mean, just documented his entire life for the next 5 to 6 years.
You did this for 5 years?
Yeah.
Still with a girlfriend.
Eh. No, no. Well, we stayed. Yes.
Oh, so are you touring with this guy?
Yeah. So after the radio station event and kind of the birth of me kind of hopping along, I was doing all that for Kevin for free as well. All the video stuff, driving, coming out of pocket with gas, still hustling websites on the side to get the gas to go to the concerts. And
did you view this Kevin Gates?
I knew he was going to. But
did you view that as like, hey, if I can do this and hang on long enough, this is going to be something. You knew that.
I knew he was going to rock it out of here because I was a fan of the product before I even met him. I mean, I was a fan. I was a consumer. So it's like I saw.
But where did you think it would go for you? So like, because there's always a selfish part in our brains that we have, but I don't think of this as self. I do. There's a part of it like, how can you leverage this? Where did you think? What did you think? Okay, if I do this, it will lead to fill in the blank.
It's a good question. I'd be lying if I said I had pinpoint clarity on the entire path of where I was going.
Right.
But what I knew was I would be able to continue to get better at my craft, and I'd be able to do it with somebody whose reputation stood strong so that when people did view or acknowledge what I had going on, they would be kind of forced to take it serious. Mm. So, you know, it was like I could continue to practice. I could leverage his brand, and in return, I can provide as much value and any value that I can to them, whatever that may be, no questions asked.
How long did you work for him for free?
I'd say 3 to 4 months. And
okay.
Then before we knew it, he was in a bidding war to sign a major label deal between Cash Money Records, who at the time, yep, so if you know, at the time, the hottest label in the industry. This was back when Lil Wayne was on the charts. And he was in a bidding war with them and Atlantic Records, which is, you know, the conglomerate. I think there's like three major record labels that essentially run the entire industry. And then that's one of the biggest players. So they were in a bidding war and I was there, you know, I was watching that play out.
Right.
We would take trips to Miami. They'd be with the Cash Money crew. They would take trips to California. They'd be with the Atlantic crew. Like I was seeing what was happening. I didn't know any of the details, but I knew like it's about to go down. And sure enough, he ended up signing a deal with Atlantic. And from that moment on, you know, they started to essentially build their business side of things and putting me on a payroll. And, you know, that just started off the whole thing.
What did they start paying you? Were they paying you project based or were you like a salary guy?
Salary.
Really?
Looking back, it was actually crazy if you actually like measure out the output time, hours, all that stuff. But I started at $500 a week, just every week. And technically it was like $10.99. So like at the end of the year, I would have to figure the tax situation out too. So, I mean, it was muddy.
$24,000 a year, killing it.
And couldn't tell me that I wasn't on top of the world.
Mm. Did you ever get raises through that process? So you said 5 or 6 years. Bro, that's a long time. So they're paying you after 6 months. Did it ever, where did it transition? I mean, that's a long time. So 6 months into the next 4.5 years, give me the abbreviated version of like where those 4.5 years went and what that was like and what y'all you did.
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I mean, that was a journey, right? And again,
Did you live on the road?
I did. I lived with him, but on the road 90% of the time, for sure. I missed a lot of family stuff. I missed a lot.
Wow. Not married?
No. Still living with that girlfriend that held me down. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So again, I didn't have clarity on where I was going with it all. I just knew I was essentially building a skill. I knew I was gaining credibility with the test subject, essentially. I knew now I was putting a little bit of money in my pocket so I can, you know, stay afloat. And what would happen is, you know, the first year I'd say I like was just letting it all soak in and just kind of young and mesmerized at how cool this was. And I'll be honest, man, at that age, you go from doing a bunch of free stuff local in the city with local artists, which keep in mind, put in perspective, like at that age, like your friends are going off to college and like doing real things that matter, right? Or that's how you feel, though. That's how I felt, I guess, as an insecure 19-year-old that dropped out of high school, right?
Yeah.
So I'm watching kids go to LSU.
Looking back on it, though, like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were right.
Yeah. But at the time, that's hard to...
At the time, my boys are going to college, and I'm sitting here following around this guy and videoing him everything he does. And so in perspective, at the time, it didn't...
It didn't make sense. Or before I got with him when it was just local nobodies and I still wasn't making anything. I mean, that's when it was the most questionable. Once I got with Kevin, again, he was so dominant locally that even those college kids started to catch on because we would go do shows in Baton Rouge at like the Varsity Theater downtown, which would be an entire LSU crowd and sell the building out. And they're in the crowds. I'm on the stage and they're trying to get me to get them, you know, so the narrative started to change a little bit for an insecure 18-year-old who's just trying to not work at McDonald's.
Sure.
So that first year, I'd say, was just me digesting it and just kind of like living on the road. I mean, it was crazy. We'd fly out to California, which, you know, prior to this, I'd never been outside of Louisiana. So now I'm like flying to California. I'm at Atlantic's headquarters. I'm literally in elevators with like famous artists like Flo Rida and stuff. Like, and these are just like normal things. So I'd say the first year was digesting that. The second year, I started to kind of normalize it a little bit and try to find ways to build leverage. I was still making the same money. I did not have the audacity to try to change that because I felt like I was in a blessed situation.
Yeah.
So.
But what were you doing? You were videoing and putting up content on
YouTube.
You were doing all his YouTube stuff.
YouTube, yeah.
So not just you were making his music videos or have they transitioned out of doing
that? It was two things. It would be like vlogs for YouTube and music videos. But then once that wasn't, you know, it's a relevant piece of the story. Once he signed with the major label,
I was gonna say.
Boom, now they have budgets for that. So now some of the biggest music video directors in the game are starting to shoot these projects. And I'm still with him because if he's there, I'm there. And I'm doing like BTS for it, vlogging that, which was really awesome. And that, again, that was to answer the original question, where was I going with all this? I was figuring it out. But like the moment that I realized that was the pattern, okay, there's a budget. There's a video commission department within the label. They like to use these guys. These are the big guys. I would go meet those guys, see everything going on. And then that's when my brain started to think, okay, maybe I could be like those guys.
Yeah.
One thing I knew for sure was I knew I didn't want to spend the rest of my life being the guy following the guy around with a camera.
No doubt. Right? Yeah.
I knew that. So I was still doing the vlogs and stuff, BTS at the music videos.
BTS behind the scenes. Go ahead.
Planting seeds and taking notes and realizing that that's a position that these other guys were doing and aspiring to want to get to that. So then that would lead to like year two, which was me understanding a little bit of the leverage I have. And that's when the hustle kind of turned back on. And now those same up-and-coming artists that I used to do stuff for free in my hometown, those guys were everywhere in all the states, and they all had access to us on Instagram. And those guys would essentially now come to me through the internet because I'm the guy shooting and known with Kevin Gates. He's saying my name in songs. It's kind of like branding at this point.
Yeah.
So now I'm turning around and that's why I never really made a big deal about the money I was making because that's how I would justify it. Leveraging the brand value.
Sure.
These other guys would reach out, $500 video, $1,000 video, $1,500 video, and I would just run them up. So now I'm essentially a workhorse trying to get the bag over here while already, you know, getting the salary over there. And it's just the more he grew, the more demand for me went up, regardless of the skill set, if I'm being completely honest. Granted,
it's value by association.
100%. And I knew that, but I still wanted to get better. And I guess to like fast forward this thing through, after a few years of doing that and kind of running through the motions, I wanted to, it still wasn't making sense for me, although like I had all the clout. Yes, I could do videos here and there for some money, but it was like I was always chasing it. And I knew I wanted to build my own brand in some way, shape, or form. So eventually I would make the hard decision of detaching from his brand. And through him, I met a group of video directors that were big in the industry. These were the guys the labels would pay to actually shoot the music videos. I met them and built a relationship with them. They lived in Atlanta. And I had a brother live in Atlanta at the time. So I basically just packed up everything, moved out there impulsively, told my, reached out to them because they were the only people I knew in the city for the most part that were doing what I, and just let them know, hey, I'm coming out here. If you need anything, I'll pull up free, you know, wow. The drill. And that was step one of me trying to do things beyond that one individual artist and try to like build my own situation. And ironically enough, those guys, they went by a brand called Motion Family. And literally probably within 4 weeks of living in Atlanta, they were like, hey, well, we have an artist signed to Def Jam named Big Crit. He needs somebody to go on tour with him for the next 5 months. Would you want to do it? So, of course, boom, back on tour.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So you had been with Kevin for like 4 or 5 years at this point.
Yeah.
And then now you're transitioned. This sounds like a weird word, but was there a breakup with Kevin? Or is it just like, hey, I'm going to go do this other
thing? Yeah, it was like that. It was respectful. And I think it was understood for sure. Because if I'm being honest, which I am, and he would say the same, and you could even look at his current situation right now, for what I was aspiring to be versus what his model was trying to create, an in-house video person, they didn't really align. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think at a young age, I recognize that. And the more I would throw out, cast a vision of wanting to do this, wanting to do
him?
That. To him. You know, it was like, you don't have to. You know, not in a discouraging way, but just in
you
a
do that.
Creating clarity of like,
yeah.
that's not what you're here for, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, not even in an ugly way, you know.
He didn't want to squash the vision, but because you were working for him and that your vision was not what he wanted you to do.
Yeah.
He wanted you to be his guy
right.
and grow with him, but still be insulated there.
That's it.
You still friends with him today?
I am. I'd say we have a respect for one another. I don't have like a relationship with him where we're communicating.
Sure.
But the irony is the relationships that I've built with the team that was around him is like family to this day. So that's where the relationships kind of preserve.
Right. So you go to Atlanta, you start doing similar things in Atlanta, but you're trying to still learn, kind of go to, I guess, the next step in learning. And then you go on tour with Big Crit.
Big Crit.
I have no idea who that is. So you go on tour with this guy, and then what do you do there?
Same thing, although this was kind of a cool experience because I felt like I wasn't a one-hit wonder. You know, I went and did something else on my own. So I felt like I needed to experience that. And two, this artist he had been around longer than Kevin. He had been on a major label longer. So I guess for whatever reason, they had more of a budget. Because when I was on the road with Kevin, you know, it was more of a grind. You know, we'd all be in Toyota Sequoias. Like, there was no tour bus at that point because it was such early stage for his career. We'd be staying in hotels, stuff like that. When I went on tour with this guy, I had to get a passport and we're, you know, we have like every night tour dates and we're going to Canada and there's a tour bus. And like, this is when it felt like, oh, this is like the movies.
It's a step up.
It's a step up for sure. For sure.
Okay. So how long did you work with Big Crit?
I worked with him through that tour I think that tour went on for about 3-4 months.
Okay. And what did you learn there that was a different, did you learn anything that was different than what you did with Kevin?
I wouldn't say I learned anything like from a craft standpoint. I mean, that was a tough time for me. And I'll say this is why. I enjoyed the tour. It was a cool experience. I did it on my own. I did it again. It was a level up, but I was still creating the same product. Mm. Money still didn't really make sense. I was still gone, working like a horse. You know, and at this point, like now I'm getting closer to my mid-20s and those same kids that went to college, they finished in college. And I had friends that, you know, back where I'm from, you either go to college or you'd go work offshore.
Yeah.
And the offshore cats made good money.
Oh, yeah. And offshore cats way ahead for four years. Way
facts,
ahead.
Facts. So when I got done with that tour with Crit, as great as it was, I still felt very lost in life because financially, from a business standpoint, I knew like what I was doing, like it just didn't feel right. This wasn't working. This wasn't
where you were called.
No, not at all.
So where'd you go from being on tour with him?
After being on tour with him, I basically had like a moment where I was like, you know what? I'm done. with all of this.
All of what?
The cameras, like all of it. The identity of who I had branded myself as throughout this time. And again, like, it sounds dramatic, but at the time, like, it was everything, you know.
You're wore out.
Exactly. Wore out and feeling like, you know, life's almost over, which is so funny. Because when we're young, we think like 30 is a dinosaur. And, you know, so just, I was worn out and I just said, you know what? It was very naive, but I was like, I'm going to walk away from all of this and I'm just going to do like the normal life thing.
Okay.
So I gave that a run.
What is normal life for you? What was your definition for normal life? Where did you transition to there?
So it was so tough, man. And what it was short term, I wanted an easier path. Mm. Although long term, I knew everything I was doing was for something bigger.
Yeah.
And during this little time window of quitting, because that's exactly what it was, I was seeking something more rewarding short term. And I was also getting older and was really starting to mentally like the idea of like settling down, having kids, all of that stuff. So I was like, I'm just going to do the normal life thing. You know, I'm not this whole music travel, like it's old to me. It doesn't fascinate me the way it does everybody else. So my first transition from that was delivering wheels for a rim distribution company that my uncle was essentially running the entire operation.
So you go from traveling, doing this deal, to working hourly jobs, delivering stuff.
Yeah.
This is normal life for you.
Normal life.
Okay.
And it was miserable. I hated it. I hated it. It lasted maybe 4 months. And then I was like, okay, this ain't working. So then it's so funny. I was like, all right, I got to get out of here, as in like the hometown. Because there was so much ego at play while I was trying to like process all of this. So I was like, all right, step one, let me just get up out of this town. That way I could kind of like start over from scratch from like a psychological standpoint, right? Because I don't want to bump into friends at Walmart and be like, you used to be the guy, right? That was like my biggest fear at that time, if I'm being completely honest.
No, it's, pretty normal.
So boom, I hit up my sister. She was living in Lafayette, Louisiana at the time. It's about 3 hours away. And next thing you know, I'm living over there with her. I'm like kind of starting life over. I go getting up, you know, I lived with her for a few months.
Do you have any money at this time saved up?
No.
Nothing.
Absolutely.
Just spend it like a drunk engine.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Perfect. No leverage, nothing. Yeah. But that was kind of the whole purpose of going to my sister's. I got a job out there delivering products for Lance, the cracker company. So I would go and service all of the, you know, all the
respect
grocery stores and stuff like that. Yeah. That was that season. It was to save up money to try to get a little bit of leverage in life. And did that for a few months, got an apartment out there and was just kind of like starting over. That's when I met my current wife. We started dating, became a thing. She moved in with me.
As a current wife, meaning you had more wives?
No. So Lafayette was like a rebirth. Normal 9-to-5 working, new relationship. The relationship came with a child.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm just trying to figure out how to be an adult, how to be a man. And did that for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up eliminating the position that I had. Okay. Didn't work out. You know, that was a common pattern with this 9-to-5 thing.
Yeah. Like
nothing tended to work out. No. I knew I wasn't good at it.
Right.
Nothing I was doing was, you know, keeping anybody to want to fight to keep me around.
Sure.
Right? I guess if I'm going to fast forward through all of this, you know, I reset. I tried to go that route, and I think God just had it in my heart to know, like, this is not.
You're unemployable, and it's okay. There are some of us out there that are unemployable, and there are some of us out there that are unbelievable people that are employee. It doesn't make one group any worse than the other. It's just the way our brains work, and it's totally, totally fine. So you figured out really quickly that you want to do your own thing. So where does it go after getting let go at Lance Crackers?
Okay. So from there it goes to, at the time, to give you a little context, at the time when I was running around with Kevin, there was I started all of Kevin's social media. So I had access to that stuff. The fans, when they would tweet and stuff, I'd see all of that. And there was a kid out of West Monroe, Louisiana that would tweet at Kevin all the time, big fan. And for whatever reason, I just remembered like his little avatar, his name, and I don't know why. Fast forward to Lafayette, fast forward to doing the normal life, not working out, still fed up. I was scrolling through Instagram one day and I seen this kid, and it was that kid. And but now, like, he's grown up. And he's a music artist. And I was like, he's really good. He's really talented. So now I'm getting creative and, you know, I'm like, I just start thinking and, like, seeing if I can. So I reach out to him and he remembers me and he's just doing his own thing independently. Nothing really going on too much. And long story short, I ended up texting some of the people that was in the circle of Kevin on the business side saying, like, hey, check out this guy. And that led to me and that artist building a relationship and me going, okay, I'm going to be a manager.
Okay, so look, I've known Colin for 5 or 6 months now. And I know I've not, every bit of this is brand new. I've not heard any of this. And we've had lunches together. We've talked on phones. I mean, I don't know any of this stuff. So we're not even to the part of the stuff that I know about you. So you're going to be a manager. Who is this person?
His name's Zach Smith.
Okay.
And yeah, so I'm connecting dots. I'm leveraging old relationships that I had, trying to see if, like, hey, I don't even know how this works, but this kid's really good. Let's make it make money, right? That's how this goes. And ironically enough, from a few phone calls, I learned how powerful relationships are.
Oh my gosh.
Within 6 to 8 weeks, this kid had deals on the table, offers through the relationship.
What kind of music artist is he?
Currently, it's kind of like a hybrid of like country pop.
So like all these guys are going to.
Exactly, exactly. But he really is from the country, West Monroe. So it fits. And I love how he's evolved into that. But at the time, it was hip hop because that's where the charts were.
Sure.
So long story short, I just start making phone calls, trying to connect dots. The dots connected. Deals were brought to the table. He respectfully, it was a lot for him.
Yeah.
I think it was overwhelming. I think it was, and you know, he's also young at the time. Mm-hmm. He respectfully didn't want to take those deals. But my perspective, what I learned and saw in that moment was, A, like, holy cow, I can't believe I even like made some phone calls and had these kind of deals brought to the table. And I learned, B, if I manage an artist, my whole future is dictated on their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that.
Yep.
So that artist management career lasted about 6 months. And then I moved on to, you know, on to the next.
There's a theme. There's a theme here. Every 6 months, you're doing something different. I would never hire you.
For the worst.
Yeah.
but seriously, man, that was an epiphany moment for me because I found like self-value again.
Mm-hmm.
Just by seeing me. And I realized the strength of relationships. So when that didn't pan out how I guess envisioned it to pan out, that kind of set fuel to like restart this whole story again. Like, all right, like I am going to do something independent.
By God, I
am going to make something yeah. work.
And yeah. we're going to make money this time.
Exactly. Because that was always the journey.
Yeah, sure.
The longer the story goes, the more I started trying to okay, I need to figure that part out. Because when I was younger and this whole story started out, I was always told like, just do what you love and then the money will just all work out.
That is bull.
It really is.
Let me tell you something. Here's the cheat code. Do what you're good at. Do what you're good at. Because what you're good at, people will pay you for. The whole thought of following your passion is fine when you're not working.
Yeah.
You got to do what you're good at in order to create a living. After hours, you can find your passion wherever it lies. But you got to make a living. You got a kid. You got a wife. You got to pay bills. Like, you got to do what you're good at. Then you can do whatever else. Yeah. So the whole thing of follow your passion, that is a bunch of bull.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I learned that.
The hard way.
The hard way, for sure. For sure. So 2020 comes around. I'm still sitting around trying to scheme up a plan. And, you know, this isn't my most proudest accomplishment, but I can't express to you at the time how impactful it was.
Yeah.
And 2020 comes around, COVID hits, world starts getting weird, everyone's locking down, families are getting close, I'm lost as can be in life. I was in the process of soul searching leading up to that. Now the world's got all this downtime, internet's scaling, everyone's on the internet, videos are up in demand. Content's everywhere. Podcasts are going crazy. And I'm at home, either working out with my family outside, riding bikes, or just like consuming content. And the content that I was consuming was like all business, 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 business. I was stuck on this mission after that management experience of like, I think I could figure something out in this business world.
Yeah.
And at the time, I had a buddy who worked for an old man who owned a retail vape shop. And
you're living where?
At this point, I'm back in Louisiana. I'm living in a condo that I'm renting. And it's me, my wife, and my little girl.
Okay.
World's locked down. My buddy's working for the old man who owns a chain of vape stores. I'm familiar with them because all through that high school stint, I was smoking cigarettes. I ended up using the vape to
get off cigarettes. Yeah.
And it just felt a lot better. So yeah. Through that, I was a consumer. So I kind of had a little peek into that world.
It's electric. I don't stink.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, COVID lockdown, my brain's going crazy. I'm consuming business information left and right. And I just had this, I don't remember if my buddy maybe planted the seed or if I just was reaching at the time, but I saw from a business standpoint how these shops were operating. I knew as a consumer, like what could be done better.
Mm.
And I felt like, hey, I could do that. Even though in hindsight, like, no, I probably shouldn't.
Or shouldn't do that.
So again, coming off putting together those deals for the management situation, I go back to the same relationship that brought those deals to the table. And I say, hey, I got something else for you to look at. So now I'm getting audacious. Now I'm like, okay, well, this is how this works, right? You know?
Okay.
And I tell my buddy, and again, this relationship roots all the way back to the Kevin Gates mm-hmm. situation. And I tell him, I say, look, I know this old man. He's got these stores. This is kind of the rundown of them. This is kind of the numbers. Got the numbers from my buddy. Basically, like, this is all we would need to start it up. I'll figure everything else out. And then you just collect 50% of everything, like, for life. And all I need is for you to put this money in front of me.
Yeah.
I'll figure the rest out.
Sweat.
Sounds absolutely crazy.
You give the sweat, he gives the dollars.
That's it. That's it. So, and he was like, bet, let's do it. So, you know, at the time, it was $50,000.
Okay.
And for me,
that was a lot of money.
That was a lot of money. $1 million.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
So I'm like, really? Wow. Okay. So I got to figure this
out. He said yes.
So I go to the old man. I basically tell him what I'm trying to do. We work out a deal. I work out a deal with him to where he kind of like essentially sources me his entire business
model.
So
you're starting another shop. You're not buying his.
I'm not buying his. I'm starting another one, but I want to use his brand. And it wasn't even really his idea. So I'm just like pitching. I'm throwing stuff on the wall. I'm pitching. I'm like, look, I got the money. You teach me the framework to do it. I'll use your brand.
What'll he get?
So what he would get is, I knew he was getting on the wholesale end. And he was starting to become a wholesaler and selling the wholesaling product to his stores as well as other stores. So it was basic. The deal was basically like, whatever I buy in product, like if I'm ordering weekly, just add 10% on top of that from the inventory costs. That's your cut. And I'll just do that forever.
Man. Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, and that's it. You don't have to do anything. I always buy the product from you.
If it costs, the wholesale price is $100, charge me $110, you keep the $10, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason why it was like that was because in this industry, it wasn't realistic for him to have all the product that I would need. So I would have to go to other distros for certain products.
Mm-hmm.
And to make sure that he got his during that, it would be like, all right, stack 10% on top of that. That's you. But the product that came directly from him, that was already kind of all baked into his cost.
Sure.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
And then we'll just do that until infinity and beyond. You won't have to do anything. You'll get yours. Buddy that lent me the money, you'll get yours forever. And then in return, I'll have a tangible thing and I'll just figure the rest out and go from there.
That's great.
That's exactly what we did. Set it up in the middle of COVID. Within 6 months, this store was doing like record-breaking numbers compared to the other 5 stores that the old man had.
Why? Why were you doing better?
I think it was a few variables. One, I have to say the timing was impeccable, meaning stimulus checks are getting cut. The market was crazy. The consumer spending was at an all-time. Consumer confidence, I'd say, was at an all-time high.
Yeah.
People were home. People
were bored.
Bored. And I went out to a city that I noticed the out of the competition, it was just all so dated and
what city?
Minimal effort. Gulfport, Mississippi. Okay. So it's about 30 minutes from Slidell, Louisiana, which is where I was living. And that way I wouldn't be messing with his market. I'd basically go west, start my own market. So I scoped out the whole market, the competition, saw what was going on, saw what was even available, and it just felt... It felt like 5 years behind compared to what was happening in Louisiana.
In Gulfport.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Correct. So I go up there. I find a great location, set up shop. I think the biggest thing, too, is when I set it up, like I went, what people weren't doing in that space were like investing heavy on like the build out and brand side. Mm-hmm. They would just kind of like get in cheap, put the products there. Hey,
and just hope everybody came and got bought their juice.
And it kind of worked for that. Like when people would do that, it was the standard. Nobody expected anything different.
Mm.
I came in with like a Chick-fil-A approach of like, let's just be really sweaty. Let's put way more money up front. Again, I didn't know if this was going to make any sense. This was just like
right. You
know, me shooting on a star. Let's do like a really nice build out. You
spent all the 50.
Oh, every bit of it.
Yeah.
Every bit of it.
Love it.
Over 60% was just on build out.
Mm.
I was like less concerned about product.
Sure.
More on, again, that art of perception that I felt like I had learned back then. I was kind of bringing it back. I was bringing in little pieces of everything. Thinking about Best Buy, like I was like, you know, how can I curate a team in the store that will have like a really good work culture? Like I had at Best Buy that'll make me want to come to work because I knew I wouldn't be able to have the leverage to keep people around in regards to like paying big salaries. But I knew I could gain leverage by having a great work culture because I've experienced that as a young child. And I know how much that meant to me versus the other jobs that I had that I absolutely hated. So
There
was that aspect. So that allowed me to curate a solid team that would actually provide the customer service that I wanted to bring to the table, which my whole thing was like the Chick-fil-A of retail vape stores. And that's what I was going
for. The Chick-fil-A of vape stores. Love it. Never will you hear that again on another podcast. Go ahead.
That's the truth. So yeah, why was it successful? I think it was a combination of all of that.
All that stuff. Okay. So you're living in Slidell, have this place in Gulfport. It's doing well. Are you for the first time in your life making actual money?
For the first time. So when I did it, like the moment I got the check and was like, I'm doing this, I left that condo I was at with my whole family in my mom's house, cut my overhead to zero.
Good, perfect.
So, and then I worked the store 7 days a week without any kind of pay because I didn't need it because we're back at mom's and, you know, I'm trying to figure this thing out. But to answer your question, yes. 6 months in, I mean, now... Yeah, I was truthfully, it was like, I'm on top of the world.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about anything y'all thought I did in my past that was cool. Like, this is cool. I got money. I have positive cash flow coming in.
Right.
And that was the tipping point.
How long did you do that before you moved?
Here?
Yeah.
Not long.
Why? Why did you move?
Now that you have all the context, let me paint the picture. Stores open, maybe 6 months in, doing solid revenue, kind of proved my point to everybody, because when I started to, when I told my mom, like, hey, I'm doing this, she was like, go get a job.
Yeah.
So 6 months in, enough revenue to kind of prove to everyone around, like, no, this can work. I had just hired my first employee probably about a month in. I hired my second employee probably about 6 months later. And then Hurricane Ida came.
Okay.
When Hurricane Ida came, everybody was evacuating towards Texas. I didn't want to deal with the traffic. So I had a buddy that lived in Birmingham and I had never been out here. So I was like, let's just pack up and go that way and avoid the traffic.
So amen for a hurricane.
What's that?
Amen for a hurricane.
Seriously.
Wow.
We come out here. What I learned in that moment was, well, first and foremost, we come out here. We're supposed to be a few days. Come to find out power's down for a long time out there. We got to stay a little longer. Okay, cool. While I'm down here, I get in a wreck. Our car gets totaled. So now I'm like playing the waiting game on insurance to give me a rental car to figure out. So God basically put me in a position to be in Birmingham for like a month when I never expected it. And what I learned in that moment was the store could run without me.
Mm.
And that was
free.
Another light bulb moment. It was like, bing.
Yeah.
And then I also was in this space of life where I was like, okay, I I think all my hard work's paying off a little.
Yeah.
I have a foundation. I have a family.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, I'm also like evolving spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very relevant factor to this like part, this timing in the story, because I would say I found Christ like 2 months before that.
Yeah.
And it was weird. I don't know if it's a good way to describe it. It was amazing, but it felt weird to talk about where I was from and with the people that I knew. So I was, and I knew that that was, that feeling was changing things.
Yeah.
And when we came to Birmingham, that felt more common out here. That makes sense.
The talk of spirituality?
For
yeah,
sure.
Sure, absolutely.
The talk of it.
Different cultures.
And I wanted to be, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
The culture was different. It was obvious, and I admired it.
Even if people don't know Jesus here, they tell you that they know Jesus here.
For sure.
It's just common.
For sure.
People in this area either know about church or know about Jesus, whereas where you're from, there's a split. I mean, some of them love Jesus and some of them don't even know who he is. So I totally understand that.
Yeah.
So you're here in Birmingham, the car gets wrecked, and you feel like, yeah, you know, oh, the store's running without me.
We're at Oak Mountain with the family.
Just hanging
having
out.
Having a ball.
Yeah.
We're stopping at random places, checking out the town. Everyone's so nice.
Yeah.
Like,
so
seriously.
What made you want to move here?
I'm a vision person, and I don't know if it's a good thing or not.
Yeah.
But just experiencing that short period of time of in recognizing the patterns of like, these people are kind. These people don't mind talking about Christ.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, there's more rural space out here than where I'm from. That was something else I was starting to become fascinated about with COVID and everything. I started to dream about having some property and some land. And I also started to learn about it. Economics and politics. And I mean, all these things that in some cultures is probably normal and happens at a younger age.
Yeah, sure.
For me, it was all brand new. And I didn't know where to go with any of it, but I felt called to be out here when I was out here. And it all felt in alignment with all of those things that I was discovering.
It's hard to argue with a way that it's such a strong feeling.
Yes.
Really, really hard. So you come to Birmingham. What are you going to do for work?
Well, the shops were doing what they were doing.
Trucking.
So, in my eyes, like, nothing could go wrong. And so, I mean, that's literally what we did. We came out here and we settled in, and it was, to be honest, it was so weird. I felt retired.
Mm.
I mean, it was truly passive income. Stores are operating, and I'm just like, what are we doing today? And that was great for a short period of time, but then it started to get scary because I knew, like, okay, I don't want to lose this blessing. I don't want to waste no time.
Yeah, sure.
I had so much free time that I never stopped consuming information around business and developing all these different areas. So I started to learn the concept of like buy the time back so you can dump it into something else and then play the compound game. So enough time went on for me to realize, okay, I can't just sit here and live like a retired man at, you know,
32.
At 32. Yeah. At the time it was like 30, you know, or 29 or something like that. So the next thing I did was rolled over some profits, started another store. That went well. A year goes by. Now I've got two stores on cruise control. Again, you know, what do I have to do at Birmingham? Technically nothing.
Yeah.
I set up an office in my house. I made sure to try to keep myself busy to be in tune with the stores and communicating with the team. And, you know, anything productive that I could do to add value, I was seeking those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this moment where my little girl at the time, I think she was in first grade, and they had a career day for the kids. And she asked me to, you know, she asked, hey, daddy, come
yeah.
to career day. And in that moment, I was like, you know, it was another one of those epiphany moments. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
What am I going to tell them, you know? Tell them that I sell nicotine products and, you know, medical cannabis. And
yeah.
So I think in that, I know in that moment that's when my brain started to change and go. Because again, up until then, it was just becoming a game. It was just like a, because that's what you're learning. Get one business, done, yeah. You know, do another one, scale more and more. But in that moment, it was like, that was weird. You go to speak to certain people. Hey, what do? You tell them, like, for whatever reason, there's like conviction.
Sure.
They may not even be thinking about it, but it's in my head.
Yeah.
And I just started feeling like, okay, I know I'm called to do something more impactful.
Right.
So then I started the journey of literally just trying to figure out what is the next thing going to be. Yeah. And fast forward, I double back, pick the camera back up, leverage the, you know, that's the beauty in it.
Thousands and thousands of hours behind a camera.
Yeah.
So all the time with Kevin, all the time with Crit, and all the time making the videos for random whoever's, all those reps, the 10,000 hours,
yeah,
is now, you know, I've seen his work, and it's, I mean, the videos he's doing for, there's a potato farmer in North Alabama that's just like killing it, and, you know, telling his story. One of the things that Colin does really well is he tells a story. And storytelling is as old as Jesus, older than Jesus. And Colin tells a really, really good story through Joy Collective and his company, and just how things happen. But he does it in a concise way that you can understand, and he does it through video because that's the way people consume these days. I mean, some people are still readers, and that's great.
Right.
But being able to leverage being on tour with these rappers, but now talking to Jimmy in Andalusia, Alabama, about his whatever farm, that's a pretty cool thing. How it goes from one end of this spectrum to the absolute other end of the spectrum.
Yeah,
so, sure. So tell me how this thing is transformed. So you started this business, Joy Collective, and you're a video creator for whoever. I mean, whoever will hire you. You've done, you know, things at funerals and celebrations of life. You've done things for farmers. What is your ideal client for Joy Collective?
I like to say that our ideal client, and this is just me, like genuinely not like a scripted,
yeah,
one line sales pitch. Just like, seriously, like, I like doing projects for other business owners. It could be corporate. It could be private equity.
Sure.
And I think an ideal client is anybody that's doing something of impact.
Mm.
And that can look as much, that could look multiple ways. It could be a nonprofit, yeah, doing something impactful. It can be a business doing something impactful. But I say that because truthfully, that allows me, it brings in leverage for me to alley-oop a great story.
Sure. No, that's great. Where does, two questions. What does the next 6 months look like for Joy Collective?
The next 6 months for Joy Collective looks like, so we're in a season of scaling for sure. And I think the next 6 months, the key word is focus. Focused on just continuing to do what we've been doing,
yeah,
continuing to provide value, continuing to execute on everything that we've committed to, and just as the volume ramps up, continuing to do that. And for me personally, it's making sure that I can stay focused in a season of, in a season that can look very repetitive,
yeah,
quote unquote, maybe boring.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're in that moment where I have to acknowledge that that's the elephant in the room.
Yeah, sure.
And as you know from my story, that's never been a easy, yeah, task. And just exercise discipline to stay focused and not be distracted by anything, and just continue to do what we've been doing that's working, that the market continues to ask for, that,
right,
continues to provide value, and continue to do it at scale while also managing what comes with being at scale.
Sure.
While also training and, you know, all the things that come along with that.
Hard question for Colin. Not hard for a lot of people, but it's a hard question for you. What does the next 3 years look like for you?
That is a hard question for me. Personally, business, just wherever my yes. brain goes. I would say, I'm thinking about this in real time. It's a good question. I love that you recognize that that's a hard
question. That's a hard question for you. Yeah. You're a six-month guy. Like, you get bored.
Yes.
You get bored, and that's totally fine. But at some point, I think, and this is not a teaching moment, but at some point, we have to recognize what God's got in front of us and how the long, slow road can still be exciting.
Yeah.
And the thing that gets us exciting is different for everybody. Kids, you know, wealth creation, growing business, life with a wife, whatever. So that's why I say, let me rephrase the question. What do you want the next 3 years to look like for Colin?
I would love to, over the next 3 years, again, stay disciplined, take the long, boring road, not seek out any other kind of anything.
Yeah.
Just continue to build and develop the Joy Collective, continue to grow it, continue to water it, continue to pour 100% of my intention into it. I would love to, man, you know, 3 years really isn't even a long time.
It's not.
It goes by so fast.
It's a long time for you, though.
It is.
It's 10% of your life.
I say this. I don't know, truthfully, if I've ever really doubled down on one thing for 3 years straight.
Yeah.
As an adult in current form. And
being with Kevin for 5 years is not the same as the next 5 years at this stage. Totally different.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So I'd say I would love to see what that other side looks like and just double down on exactly what we're doing, continuing to grow it, water it, nurture it. Personally, I'd love to continue to grow and develop in my faith as a family. I would love to, you know, 3 years, maybe gain some leverage to buy a little bit of time back, to be a little more present. You know, my daughter, she's in that season now where, like, she's hopping into sports and stuff. And, you know, we did a baseball summer camp and I was like, oh, I get it. Like, the sports dads, like, this is really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I'm getting a taste of that. I can see that's right around the corner. I know work-life balance is kind of a myth in our world sometimes, but that's what I would love to see. Chip away at that.
If someone needed it, well, if someone wanted to contact you and say, hey, I need something done, or I want to talk, or I want to whatever, how can someone find you?
You could go to the joycollectivemedia.com.
Joycollectivemedia.com.
Reach out on our contact page. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, any of the platforms. You can find me personally. Just type in Colin Odell. You could even just Google video production Birmingham and you'll see the Joy Collective.
Great. Great. It's been great.
Yeah.
Your story, I knew 30, 25% of that. So that's a wonderful, wonderful story. I know somebody out there is going to absolutely enjoy it. And it's going to be motivating for somebody. So I'm really happy for you. And I'm excited to see the next 3 to 10 years down the road. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you bringing me on.
Sir.